Are you guys ready?
Yeah.
All right.
Please press 1 for Steve's main phone, 2 for Steve's alternate phone, or 3 for Janet.
I want to talk to Janet, but let's press 1. Hello, and welcome to the WozCast, the best 30-minute Woz conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Derek Von Elijah, and we have the man you asked for, Steve Wozniak's on the line with us. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Hi, glad to be here. Hope it's interesting.
I'm sure you will be very interesting. And I'm also here with Leander Keeney. Alex Heath is with us as well. Buster Hine is here. Hey, guys.
Hey.
And we might experience a few audio issues on the call. We're talking to Steve on his phone, and it's kind of cutting in and out, but we're going to try and do our best here.
My AT&T iPhone, so beware.
Enough said.
My Verizon one. I'm thinking of switching everything to Verizon and getting rid of some very valuable features from AT&T, like unlimited international data for $64 a month. I might give that up just to go to Verizon.
Wow, that is definitely cheap.
I travel so much, and I find that the AT&T plans, they must have horrible roaming agreements. A lot of countries that they cover in like zero to very, very slow for data, and they don't cover many countries like Russia and South Africa. I travel so much. Verizon covers everybody, and it works.
Huh, interesting.
Really? Huh. I thought there was more GSM networks.
Yeah. GSM. I'm talking GSM networks on the world phone, which the iPhone 4 and the iPhone 5 are world phones.
Is that the iPhone?
Both the GSM and the CDMA side. If you buy it at Verizon, you get the CDMA side and the GSM side. But if you buy it at AT&T, let's go back a step to the iPhone 4S. If you bought it at AT&T, they only tune the GSM. So even though it's the same phone with the same parts, they don't make it usable on Verizon, whereas the Verizon one is usable on AT&T. Definition of the word usable.
Yeah, right. Is that the phone you bought in Australia, the iPhone 5 you're talking on right now?
No, I'm not. I certainly could be. You'd have had to call an Australian number to reach it. I just got home. I've been traveling all day, like 24 hours. And so I haven't had time. I have my AT&T iPhone here that I could just pop it a SIM and get it set up for me. But I'm, like I said, I may move this number. Maybe the time to move it to Verizon and give up a valuable feature. I'll think about that later today or tomorrow when I get time. So I'm on my 4S right now. And to tell you the truth, I couldn't tell you the difference. Just holding it here onto my ear.
Yeah, right. So, but of course, you said you're planning to move to Australia. Is that right?
I've actually, like a lot of Americans, go to Australia. Wow, the first time there. Wow, it's be a neat place to live. It's doable for an American. It's just like another state almost. And so I felt that way for like 30 years, but I always thought it had that, you know, liberal, European view, keep out anybody that doesn't belong to our country, and that you could never possibly get citizenship in a country like that. And then just recently, in this last year, some lawyer in Australia took it up and contacted ministries and found out the format by which I can get the equivalent of a green card, which is the permanent residency so you can stay and become a citizen. And so I decided if it comes your way, these little accidents in life that come your way, they're worth pursuing. And I don't tend to move there immediately, but it's really because I like Australia. I like the people. I like the joking and the atmosphere and just, you know, the environment and, you know, they're a little less one of the bullies of the world.
Well, Steve, we have quite a few Australian listeners, and we were contacted by a few of them that were waiting in line with you in Australia for your iPhone. How much fun is that? I mean, I'm sure you get recognized all the time when you're in line, especially when it's in Australia. People must be really shocked that you're there. Did you get approached by a lot of people?
Yeah. Not as many as usually in the States. They were a little bit more polite. There was a period when I first showed up and we did about, you know, maybe 30 photographs, but that's actually a low amount for an entire night. And it could have run into hundreds. People went back in the line. They might have known I was there, and the word was not out to the press early on. Like it always spreads here in the States. The Apple store knew I was going to be there, you know, all night, but they didn't let the word out. And to tell you the truth, you called it fun. To me, every time I have waited in line has been so fun just talking to like-minded people interested in, you know, buying the newest, latest, greatest technology, which is one of my things in life. But, you know, partly also, because I've done it every time, I sort of almost feel like I'm obligated. If I skip it, somebody's going to notice, or I'm going to notice it. A hole in a record, you know, I'm batting 1,000. And so twice now I've been in other cities due to speeches I was giving, had to wait all night to get an iPhone, or was it the iPad the last time in Century City, and then hop in a limousine and go give a speech. But, you know, it makes it more worth something if it's a sacrifice. And I've been in the Apple game for so long. We have made a lot of sort of sacrifices in life for what we believe in, and that makes it more important, makes us more passionate about it. So, so I don't know when I'll stop. Obviously, it's not something I have to do ever. Nobody has to wait in line.
Sounds like a lot of fun, though.
And I will tell you, one of my other motivations for waiting in line this time was that when the iPhone 5 was introduced, I was in China. I couldn't get to the Apple store for like half an hour. By the time I got the order in, didn't get in the first delivery batch. This was a way to not only be in the first delivery batch, but the first delivery batch in the entire world.
Wow.
Due to the time zone they were on this time, they were not half an hour behind Adelaide, Australia. Some of the states, Queensland, where I was, doesn't do us daylight savings time. So I got the phone 17 hours before my American friends, and I said, "Hey, shove it, Americans." jokingly.
Steve, how many iPhones? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Steve.
So I beat the Americans this time, and that was just a thrill I'll remember forever, to be in the first group of the world to get it. And I was very, very pleased. I mean, I fell in love with the phone right away for the looks and the feel, but it's wearing off. That sort of initial love is wearing off. And at first I thought I was going to get a black one, because Apple was only showing the black one. Like, maybe they were scared the back of a white one didn't look good. I couldn't really find it, you know, prominently in the news. And when I saw the white one, oh my God, I said, that's the one I want. But I satisfied myself.
That's exactly what happened to me too.
Same here, Steve.
And I'm going to keep my Australian SIMs. The phone actually works here, not on LTE, but it works fine here in the States. You know, and I've just got a prepaid SIM from Telstra. That prepaid is so nice. I can go online, check my account anytime, see if I'm in trouble. If I were to, you know, use thousands of bucks of data, well, if my SIM runs out after $30, I'm safe. So I kind of like that pay-as-you-go plan, and it's an unlocked phone. I also like that very much, because I got in the habit of only making sure my iPhones were unlocked after a bad experience in Russia, which is one of the countries AT&T does not even have covered in their international plans.
Hmm.
They don't have Russia. They don't have South Africa. I don't even, you know, I don't know what the whole list is, but it's so as soon as they come out with the 4S unlocked, and they probably have to do it by law, because at the same time, AT&T came and said they'll unlock any off-contract iPhone 4, but it's the trouble is they make it so miserable experience. I sat here with 5 iPhone 4s. I wanted to get unlocked, and after 2, I waited a month. I gave up. I was too scared to try the 3rd one, and the 4th and the 5th. It's a horrible, horrible process. For someone who's short of time traveling, you get a process started. You don't know if it got completed. You plug it into iTunes with a SIM. You plug it in without, and eventually you get a message saying it's unlocked. And it scares me, and I don't want to do the next one. It's so much hassle and work, and AT&T is usually pretty good. They just take the number on the phone, but sometimes they say, sorry, you'll have to get the original receipt. Oh,
did you have to send a fax?
It was on an email. It was an email. Huh?
Did you have to send a fax?
Go ahead.
No, I did not,
but I have to send a fax. But I would have had to fax them, or I'll just take a photograph and email them a photo. I think I did fax one time my receipts. Yes, I got 2 receipts from a local Apple store. They didn't have a receipt for one of the iPhones I was trying, and it's in an old email system that doesn't run on Lion or Mountain Lion. It's way back. You know, it was Eudora, and it just got excluded. So I'm not going to dig that receipt out of anywhere. And I just sort of stopped. I didn't even bother. I'm not even going to try to unlock it when they make it that damn miserable. You know, I'm just glad for countries like Australia where by law they're unlocked. If you buy them, you know, at least if you buy them full price, they're unlocked.
I wish it were that way in the U.S. Steve, how do you feel about the iPhone's bigger screen? I mean, when you first got it in your hands, what were kind of your first impressions of it? I know you talked a little bit about that earlier.
my first impressions were the same as they are now, which is basically I have room to organize my icons for the apps.
Mm-hmm.
I can just organize a few more onto a few lesser pages. And aside from that, I mean, the screen quality seems to be a little better, but I haven't had time to go out, like, really take photographs and compare. So it's not something that I've noticed and felt. When I see things like the purple, you know, the purple from, you know, something that's glowing next to you, I actually pointed it at a light bulb and, yeah, saw that effect. But overall, it's very much the same, you know, effect to me as before. I did not like the picture quality on the iPhone 4S because I would be out in places with friends and I'm usually carrying multiple phones and they would love the ones on the Androids and I'd look at them, they'd look better, whether it was video or TV shows or just photographs. They just tend to look a lot better on most of the screens I have on certain models of Android phones. And I don't like that. I want the Apple to always be the best. So I'm hoping that this one will, I'm pretty sure this one's going to be, you know, right up there now and maybe the best of all. And that's very important, you know. Visual appearance is one of the strong points of all Apple products.
Oh, very much so.
Not only how the product looks, but, you know, what it conveys to your eyes. Look at our step that we took to a mouse. That was for the human eye because you could always you could operate a computer with arrow keys before and move the cursor around with arrow keys, but that's a one-dimensional. Arrow keys are one dimension. The eye works in two dimensions. It kind of works in three, but let's say two dimensions. And now you had a cursor that you could sway around X and Y coordinates, vertical and horizontal. So it's like very important, you know, what are the characteristics of a human being? How do you write software to cater it to, you know, do the most for what the human being has? And so I'm very hoping that this display has just better, brighter, you know, colors and looks more vivid and more interesting for photographs. And I'm convinced it will be. But like I said, I've been traveling. I've been speaking. I haven't had a moment to stop hardly since I bought the phone. So I've just basically been able to experience it for all the normal things. It just really works the same as I did. And I thought in Australia, I just stopped using my American iPhone. And even here this afternoon, back almost at home, I was at a restaurant. I was using my Australian iPhone, and it roamed on AT&T and worked just fine, you know, for like some of my normal things, you know, be it, you know, Facebook or, you know, Foursquare check-ins or, you know, checking flight apps and, you know, doing that kind of stuff.
Well, people are saying, Steve, that the iPhone 5 was a big disappointment and that Apple isn't innovating any longer because it was so like the one that came before.
Well,
Do you agree
that's
with that,
true.
Or do you think...
The thing about Apple products is to fall all through time, you fall in love with them, and sometimes Apple takes great steps for the world ahead of anyone else, be it FireWire, or the first to really implement USB, or Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi for consumers. Apple was the first. So sometimes they're way out in the lead in some areas. Now, something like LTE, they're obviously, you know, kind of last man on the block. They're kind of behind on that. And to tell you the truth, I have carried around Android phones with LTE and iPhones without it. And yes, I can pull up demos of how fast I can download something and show you a demo of how fast LTE is. I can speak a command and have my words come back instantly. But you know what? In overall use, over the months of time that I've done that, I don't notice any difference. The AT&T iPhone is just fine and speaking, you know, 3G plus. So I don't think LTE is a huge needed step, but I think it is marketing-wise, it's an important step. People complain a little bit about problems like the maps, but I mean, I just used Siri to navigate to my house coming home and didn't encounter. I don't expect to encounter difficulties with the maps like we're reading about. I think that there are, if you have a very sparse inaccuracies in a map and you put a phone out to 5 million people, you're going to hear everywhere about different, you know, little errors it has in the map, but in general, I think it's going to work. Like, remember AntennaGate?
Of course,
AntennaGate. Everyone was. I could hold my finger in a certain spot and kill the signal, but you know, when I just used the phone normally, or if I was even the least bit careful, you get in the habit. You just unconsciously are never getting. I never got into a problem where it seems to be having a problem because of where I'm touching the phone. So even though it was reported so widely, I think it was not a major, major problem to the percentage that, you know, it's a bad product or something like that. And that's what I expect with the maps, that they'll be totally usable and it'll just be, you know, rare occurrences. Of course, when you're trying to get somewhere, and it misleads you. You get so mad because that shouldn't happen, and it really messes up your day.
I was going to say, yeah, that's not how you ended up in Australia, is it, Steve?
And, you know, I've still got Navigon, and I even have Navigon for all these countries. So when I was in Australia, I was using Navigon Australia, and it worked fine. So, you know, worst case, I'm covered on iPhone, getting me to where I need to get to. But I'll actually trust the new maps until I have a problem.
That's an interesting point. I feel like that happens with Apple a lot. Sorry, go ahead, Steve.
So I fell, so I fell in love with the phone right away. When I saw the looks and the backs of the phones, I just thought it was so spectacular. But it has, in the last week, it sort of faded off on me. It sort of faded back down, and I hold it up to my iPhone 4, and they hold their edges next to each other, and it looks like all they did was they made the top and the bottom skinnier. It's pretty much what it looks like. And yet they had more space due to being, you know, half an inch taller or whatever. They had smaller connectors taking up less space inside. And thank God I don't have a ton of, like, speaker things that I have to plug my iPhone into, that new connector, because look at all the hotels you go to, and they've got the old iPod connector. I think it is going to cause some problems for people, but I don't have my adapters yet to try them, so I don't want to really – don't take my word that somehow unusable. But Apple did the most human thing in the world, and I'll stand by this. A company that makes a connector, you can plug in either way, and it works. They did it with some little smarts tricking around, you know, which wires, what signal. I mean, there are ways to do it symmetrically without going that far. But I just love a company that thinks out, what would a human really want? And it's not necessarily technical. And that's so beautiful. I wish every connector in the world were the same. That's my only hang up. But if they're to be the same, I wish they were the Apple ones. If Apple would license it, you know. I wish Apple were more into this licensing, you know, cross-licensing. We have something great, license it, make some money off of it, and let everybody else use that great thing, and the whole world goes your way. And then they could also look at on other products that other companies make, and instead of suing the heck out of them, cross-license and use their best features freely, you know. Mm-hmm. I want the iPhone to be the best possible phone in the world with all the best features, but no one product ever has all the best.
Hey, Waz.
By the way, I'm getting happier with Siri than I had been. More and more, Siri is working for the things that I want to and helping me rather than frustrating me and I have to turn to another product.
So
that's my iPhone 5. And actually, most of what I'm talking about is iOS 6, actually. The iPhone 5 itself, like I said, it seems to be just a different size. And why didn't they keep the same aspect ratio, grow it horizontally and vertically? Because you might run into some people complaining in the Apple community saying, oh, they've got to use one thumb to reach everything. I do fine, you know, one or two-handed on my larger phone, you know, like the Samsung S3 or the Motorola Droid Razr. And I don't mind them at all. That size screen is actually more pleasant sometimes to the eye. So
yeah, I tend to agree with you on that point.
You'll find a variant of opinion because I am an adult. What about young people holding a phone? It might be. I mean, the larger phones fit fine in my hand, but they might not fit so well in a small hand. And if I go even further, even the Samsung Note, which is a pretty gigantic phone, that one's pretty nice. I was actually in Korea and I saw a ton. I was visiting a school. A ton of middle school kids, boys and girls, all these girls are coming. They have this big, huge, you know, Samsung Note phone, taking pictures with it and everything.
Wow.
And there are, you know, and you have to try it. My wife, you know, would sometimes make a comment from the side, oh, it's very readable, or she, you know, she likes things bigger as the eyes get weaker. And it's kind of neat to go back to those Newton days of handwriting when I took notes, but I don't think I really want to. You know what? Actually, I did some handwriting on my Note. The Samsung S3 is a little too small of a screen for that. But on the Note, you could actually write a few words. Oh my gosh, it was a lot more fun to me than typing, but I never became a texter. I sort of missed that whole, is the right generation for that. And so I'm awful at texting. And text is a problem for me because I type in Dvorak on my keyboard. So where the letters are, I'm not used to the QWERTY keyboard at all. So I almost have to be looking as I'm, you know, tapping on my iPhone, and I'm very inefficient at that. So handwriting feels nice. And things, if you look back at a lot of Apple products, and even Steve Jobs is thinking, a lot of things that feel good to the human muscles attract you to Apple products. Mm-hmm. Look at that first iPod. There, if you compare it to all the MP3 products that were being introduced in the world, hardware products, that iPod, here you had the scroll wheel. How fun it was to scroll through a list in a circular fashion with your thumb. It's almost one of those things that caused you to fall in love with it right away. You know, I don't know how Steve came up with such, you know, ingenious formulas. It's sort of the knack of knowing. And I do like the feel. And, you know, the new iPhone 5, the lighter feel to it. I actually like that, although mm-hmm. I also kind of blame it for the one time I dropped it today in the airport.
Oh, you dropped it already?
It always makes you reorganize. You organize all your pockets and you're pulling things out, so... And you've got a million hands full of things, bags and all that. So, yeah, I dropped it. It survived fine. You know, I figured it would survive fine from what I've read. I think it's tougher than before. And that's another good human thing. You know, we humans got to be thought of first. What do we really want? We don't want features and ability to do this and a certain cat method, you know, and a certain way that an app works and a new little shortcut. No, all those things you can live without. You look at the features of an iPhone, you look at the features of an Android or a Samsung or a Motorola, and you'll find good ones everywhere. But you know what? None of them are the absolute you have to have it. Sure, if you're a fanboy, you get in the Apple camp, it has this feature, nobody else has that. And so I have to have, and they make it seem like one feature is worth infinity, and all the other features kind of matter. You know what I've found in life? Even something that's really important that I use a lot is a big part of my life. If I'm forced to do without it, it wasn't something I absolutely cannot live without. So it's really these little human things that make all the difference. Look at the MagSafe power connector on the MacBook Pros. How come nobody else has that? I mean, maybe it's because Apple doesn't license it, but
right.
It's just the most beautiful thing in power connectors in the world ever. And it just makes me feel like, why doesn't, you know, once in a while, people should use their brains and think out how to make things nice for people, just like the reversible new dock connector on the iPhone 5.
Do you think there's a specific feature Apple could add on the next iPhone, Steve, that people would be really excited about to where it wouldn't be like just a disappointment like people were with the iPhone 5?
No, you know what? If you're making the trade, if you're in Apple making the trade-offs, it's like you have the responsibility. And I trust the people there to make, you know, very good decisions. I'll tell you a few on my own personal want list, but I'm not in control of all of the input as to what you're comparing to and how are you making the decisions and who are the smart people showing you, you know, aspects of research and here's what things will cost. So I don't know all the details, but I would have liked a wider screen, as I mentioned before. I like longer battery life. I'll tell you, my Droid Razor Max, I never runs out. And my iPhones, I keep them charged wherever I can, but if I don't, they run out by the end of the day, and that bothers me. That's an inhuman thing.
Yeah.
So I wish we had a little more battery. I wish we had some of the nice features of the Samsung phones, like where you slide your palm across the screen, and it takes a screen snapshot. Oh, my God, that's so much nicer than pushing two awkward buttons, and you never forget it, or turning the phone over to mute it.
Huh.
You know? Mm-hmm. I wish we had some of those other features that other people have that are really good and, you know, treating everybody nice and saying we're all going to make the best products we can as first time after. I don't think of yet too many more things. Let's see. I wish there were one connector for the world that were standard, but I'll take Apple's new dock connector over micro USB where I never plug it in the right way. Mm. I'll get that any day. I wish they had something equivalent to AppleScript. Now, AppleScript is a programming language, and Apple's current, the mentality that you see in all the products that they come out with is we aren't going to let people have an alternate way to run programs on our machine. They have to go through our store, our control, into our tightly fenced playground. And they have to, so a programming language like Apple Script. At first, I thought, God, maybe if you could just sit down and make an Apple Script telling all of your applications, you know, that would be Apple Scriptable, telling them in their own little languages what to do. But now I'm thinking Siri is a way that gets around that programming language stuff a bit. If, in other words, don't give the users the programmability, which is what I would want, to tell you the truth. And I guess in a jailbroken phone, you could implement this. But what you have, you speak to Siri, but the first words you speak, if it's the name of an app on your phone, you are now speaking directly to that app in its dictionary. And its dictionary will be, you know, known by the Siri computers, so it will know which words you're probably saying to make choices between different words. And if you could just say, you know, tell Foursquare to check in at Pete's Liquor, and it does it, I would love that. And by the way, navigation is, I've always wanted navigation by voice, because I've tried so many nav systems, and the ones that work by voice, a Garmin I have and my Android phones, are my favorites, because I just speak an address.
Me too,
I speak the name of a place, it always finds it. And now with Siri, I can at least speak. I've had a couple of cases where it didn't find the place as well like Android does. And that I think is just because the databases, Android is a full database of the entire internet or something. But I want to be able to speak, real simple, you know, navigation commands. And I still have to hit a second button to say start on the iPhone. Yeah, and it's so fun. I tell you, I love it so much on my, you know, my Droids, where I just, you know, say navigate to Cicero's Pizza, and I just wait while it spins around for 5 seconds. You know, a little timer lets me cancel out. And it navigates there. I don't have to push another button. It's, you know, gosh darn it. Why do we used to talk about how installing programs on a Macintosh back in the MacOS days was so simple. Install it like this and it's done. And on PCs, you'd have to go step to a step to a step to a step to a step. Well, now look what we have for installing apps on our Macintosh computers. It's a step and a step and okay this and okay that and build by that and install this and type the password. But it's, you know, it's like, it's almost like how we used to call communism bad for a bunch of things that our country's doing now. And you start to feel, oh my gosh, I called it bad once before. Didn't it become a central value of mine, a core value of what's good and what's not? So we're kind of stuck with them. And simplifying things, simplifying the number of steps is a human thing. So I hope the navigation on the iPhone, you know, gives you like 5 seconds to cancel out someday and goes ahead and navigates on its own without having to hit a second button.
Any plans to jailbreak, Waz?
I have jailbroken before, and I get tired of unjailbreaking and rejailbreaking. There are so many thousands of apps for everything in the world in the legitimate market that, you know, you almost make up this excuse. I can do this, I can do that, I can do that, I can have all this fanciful color, and I can make my, personalize my iPhone, and I'm for jailbreaking, and I love it. And the mentality that goes into it is, you know, young people trying to have little other things that other people don't have, doing what you aren't supposed to be able to do. So I love that, but I am so short of time these days. I have such a busy schedule. I wouldn't have time to be that kind of a explore it all geek, and then have something drop out on me sometime. And So I'm just a bad subject. So I like what it's about. I don't like jailbreaking for the ability to, like, get an unlimited data plan and tether it to your computer, you know, or some of these things that aren't technically even legal once you've jailbroken. I don't want it for that purpose.
But I applaud
the ability to jailbreak and being open, because you know what? It's like open source. We were, you know, you can buy a product, and if you're smart, you can put in a few of your own little attachments software, let's say, and make it work a little special your way. Do something special for you. It might not have any commercial value at all, and if you're a smart programmer. And, you know, so jailbreaking really lets those people get in there and find a few things that are useful, that others like and appreciate, that are fun, and I'm glad to see it. I wish it were like our computers. Look at my MacBook Pro. Anybody can put out a program, and I can get that program, install it, and run it. And I I miss that on the iPad. But you see, I'm not the main iPad customer. The main iPad customer is the person who's afraid they don't know anything about computers, or they want such a simple life. Nothing can. You don't have to do that thinking.
Right.
You know, it almost goes against the concept of jailbreak.
You know, the guy who wants to do all this thinking and gizmoing and writing programs in a lot of languages, well, okay, get an Android, I guess, or something, you know, just do something else. But I think that the market for iPads is just huge, and eventually everyone gets kind of tired, and I just wanted to use it.
We're all meeting here in San Francisco this weekend, actually. All the jailbreak hackers are for a convention called JailbreakCon, and we're going to be talking about jailbreaking the iPhone 5 and jailbreaking iOS 6. And it's a big people are talking in the community about innovation and about Apple's innovation in iOS and how Apple has matured iOS so much in the past couple of years. And they keep adding features, and some would say even features that jailbreakers came up with. You know, Apple is known to hire, you know, jailbreak developers in the past. What is your take on that?
I like the quote I saw. It was something like Apple would make comments if you want to aim for where people are going to be, and the jailbreakers have been there and left already. In the old days on our computers, we personalized an awful lot of things, colors of screen. That was one of the big fun parts of a Macintosh in the early days, let's say. And I think you could not show it any complexity in the existing iPhone and iPad, not make it anything visible, but just have to find your way into one little menu item that exposes you to a ton of personalization setups, but you can mess yourself up and confuse yourself. What if you walked up, remember the old Nokia phones, and everybody would go in and plug in every kind of ringtone and different sounds for different things, and even as phones got smarter and smarter, we would like to play with all sorts of different tones that have different meanings, and when somebody calls me, it plays a different song than someone else. So we want that personalization. Then when you walk up to any iPhone, the icons might be in a different place, but you know how to use the camera.
Yeah.
It's like things aren't too hidden and hard to find, and they kind of look the same. So the benefits to the masses, and we used to speak about the rest of us. The rest of us are ones that aren't computer experts, not even gadget experts like ourselves on this phone call. So I think that's why Apple's so successful today. They really have managed to hit that market and yet create such incredible products. Now, the products today from Apple are very much like Sony at periods in my life, whether it was hi-fis, televisions, they went into VCRs around the time we started Apple, and then got into things like CD players, Walkmans. The Sony products, of all the companies that would jump on and make these sort of products, the Sony ones were a little bit visually tiny bit smaller, nicer, sleeker. They were cleaner. They were just more pleasant to the eye. They looked like they were more, you know, more like a gem, a jewel you hold in your pocket. That's the exact same formula that Apple's using. Sony lost it. There was a point in time, especially around like PC times, and the VAIO was really a step ahead. But a lot of the Sony products, the other products, started losing it and not looking as skinny, as sleek, as front beautiful, as obvious to the eye as a lot of the other manufacturers. This is like DVD players when they came out, and, you know, the VCRs before that. But Sony lost that formula, and I don't know. We who believe so much in Apple and want that quality, we've got to keep the pressure on Apple, because if Apple drops it and falls behind, the whole world probably will lose that formula to, you know, I don't know, advancing the beauty of technology products and what they do for you, and just become lame to, we got a bunch of big companies, we know how to make the money and to make the next product that will sell, and we don't have to think of new things and, you know, very different things, and we don't have to be exceptional and the greatest in the world. So I hope Apple always keeps that leadership.
Do you see any danger that was? Because, of course, in a week, it's the anniversary of Steve Jobs' death. Do you see any evidence that Apple, you know, still needs his sort of visionary leadership?
I actually spoke to Steve about this before his death, that, you know, and he sort of disagreed, maybe like a year before his death, but it was like, not only does Apple have its own thinking inside, Steve tended to think we make good products is all it is. That's really the answer. And that we're smart, we do it. But you know what? The funny thing is, when you have all these consumers that haven't been let down, ready to jump on it, they give you a base to establish a worldwide standard with your excellence, whereas the excellence might have been not noticed. And also, our customers for Apple, and if Apple put out schlocky little products that just didn't look good and started looking plasticky and dirty, you know, and something that you would be second rate and second cost. If we Apple users start to revolt and we start to speak out against it. So we're one of the big forces that keeps Apple on the right direction for a while. Corporate culture can change. It can't change overnight. And I think it's part of our duty as those of us who love good technology and are so used to it coming from Apple, it's part of our duty to actually keep a little pressure on Apple that we're judging you according to these standards. Mm-hmm. The iPhone 5 is a good example. It's basically, like you said, very much an iPhone 4. I really don't notice the experience in using it, any change at all, but it's so beautiful.
It really
is. I just still think it's beautiful. And all they really did was make it thin with a thin little schlock of chrome color on the back of my white one instead of, you know, a piece of white plastic, the type stuff. But I don't know. The eye spots that. It's it. Maybe we in the Apple group have gotten too much into it's like fashion. You know the steps that have gotten you here so far, so you know what to appreciate next if it's only a slight bit different. In other words, we have difficulty assessing our own judgment. Mm-hmm. Are we correct about what is beauty and what is not and what could have been done and what not? I looked at the iPhone 4S, you know, and I compared it to, yes, they were larger phones, but ones like the Samsung S3 and even the Motorola Razr, the direct Razr, was so light, you know, especially before, if you buy the Max version, in the hand, it rests in the hand with an even balance. So I would compare it, and other products had, you know, from their own senses, you know, good styles of beauty too, and they all tend towards a minimalist screen. So you don't bother the eye with a ton of, you know, like the old days, every little remote control, millions of buttons everywhere, and that scares you off. That's not the modern world of smartphones.
Hmm. Well, hey, Steve, we definitely want to be cognizant of your time. We don't want to take any more. I know you're a busy guy. You're probably going to be rested up now that you're back from New Zealand, I would imagine, right?
Well, I would be at the Jailbreak conference this weekend, but I'm home for 2 days, and then I'm off to Florida. And then I don't remember if I'm even back for 1 day and then off somewhere. So I'm constantly traveling now. I attribute my heavy speaking schedule. I get a lot of speaking invitations, very high level, okay. And I get them largely because Apple is so prominent in the news. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, with Steve Jobs' death, then with Steve Jobs' book, you know, it's like any publicity is good publicity. It's strong publicity
right.
Making me popular to hire. And then we got the movies coming out. So I'm going to be busy, like, forever. And, I mean, the next few years. I think I have, like, 70 speeches in places around the world, like China and Australia, where I just got back from, that I fly long distances to. 70 a year. You figure it out.
Good grief.
And it's an unbelievable work schedule. Yeah. And so I have to balance just enough spare time. What bothers me the most about flying is not you wind up in a different time zone tired or something. It's that I wind up in a different time zone and I've been off the internet for sometimes 33 hours.
Wow.
And now I've got to pull up my computer, and the amount of catch up when you haven't been keeping up for 33 hours. Those are miserable. Those are the most miserable times in my life. But I just wish there was a way around it.
And here I was just worrying the plane's going to crash.
I get way too much fan mail for any one person to handle. Just people who want to express their good feelings about today's technology, about Apple's role in it, about their jobs in technology that they attribute to those of us who helped start the whole industry. I get tons of that kind of mail, and way too much for one person to answer. So I answer only a fraction of it.
Well, Steve, we certainly appreciate having you on. I wanted to say this earlier. We polled our many, many thousands of listeners and asked who they wanted to have on, and you were at the top of the list. So they were really excited when we told them that you had finally said yes.
I think it's partly because I'm open and I don't hide from questions. I don't concoct answers, and I don't lie. I only press it like my viewpoint. I'd never say you're bad for thinking a different way than me. And people tend to like that whole personality.
You're also extremely likable.
When I grew up, I was so shy. I was so shy you wouldn't recognize the two of us. Something happened. I conked on the head.
Steve, thanks so much for being on the CultCast. We hope to have you on again in the future, maybe once life settles down a little bit and you're in your bathing suit on the beach in Australia.
Yes, it's not today. I've got to unpack a million little tech things that have arrived at my house, including a couple of iPhone 5s. I've got a million little things, you know, that I order all the time, gadgets, flashlights, and those new, by the way, the new AirPods. I haven't heard much discussion about those. Those shocked me.
I was going to ask you about those. Did you say you liked them?
I'm used to buying Eddie Notice and Ultimate Ears. I have a lot of Ultimate Ears ones. Both pop in your ear, and I have them where they were fitted to my ear. I got your impressions,
right.
$25 an ear. Really see the thing. And I love audio quality. Means so much to me. You hear other little aspects of a song that you don't hear with every other earbud in the world. And every other earbud in the world has been so lousy to what I'm used to. And I popped in these new EarPods, and I got to say, somebody put a lot of good effort and thinking into those. Those sound better than any other earbuds I've tried, you know, short of those super expensive, you know, Ultimate Ears and Eddie Motors.
We totally agree. Leander and I were actually just talking about this, and they sound amazing, and the little control
another good reason to carry them is if you want to take a picture without touching your iPhone, which might jiggle it.
Oh, that's right.
You could always press the volume up on the earphone cable.
That's a great tip, yeah.
So next time you see Steve Waz out somewhere, you don't want to be rude and hold your iPhone up in his face. You can do it covertly with the earbud headphones.
I'll tell you one thing. Everywhere I go, of course, I see a lot of the cameras of the world, and they started switching from PDF cameras, PHD cameras, push ear dot. They started switching from those to phones, smartphones, and then the white iPhone came along. And every time somebody holds up a white iPhone, it stands out. The crowd so much from all the other cameras except me. I like to hear that. And that's my point on cameras. That's all.
Well, hey, Steve, that's all the time we have. I want to thank you for coming on. I know you're really busy, and we really, really appreciate having you on. So thanks again.
Okay, good luck in all your efforts. It's a big part of my life, too.
Okay, thanks Steve. Much, if you want to hear more from Steve, of course, you could follow him on Twitter. He's at Steve Waz. You can follow his check-ins at restaurants and airports all across the world.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
Bye.
Wow, so that was great. Thank you, everyone, for suggesting we have the Waz on. We finally got him for you, and boy, he likes to talk about Apple stuff, and we love listening to it. Hope you did, too. This has been the CultCast, the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. You can follow Buster at BST3R on Twitter. Alex is Alex E. Heath. Leander is L. Caney. And, of course, for all the best news, reviews, and how-tos, Cult of Mac. I'm at Erfon, E-R-F-O-N. New episodes of the CultCast come out every Thursday night. Thank you for listening. We will catch you guys next time. Check, 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 to check, check, to check. Leander, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Cool. Buster, you there?
Yep.
Your guy gives his audio both sound really good.
Yeah. Buster sounds like he's right in my ear. It's kind of weird. I can feel his hairy hands crawling down my back.
Hairy hands? I waxed recently.
Oh, yeah.